Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Samach Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on Daf Samach Aleph 13 lines from the top at the Mishnah. The Mishnah deals with the continuing topic of women who are suitable for marriage to a Kohen Gadol. Ires Esu Almona, a Kohen, a regular Kohen, entered Erusin with an Almona. That's the first stage of the two stages of involving marriage, Erusin and Nisuin. So a common Kohen entered Erusin, first stage of marriage, with a widow. A widow is a woman that a common Kohen, a Kohen Hedyot, is allowed to marry. A Kohen Gadol, the high priest, is not allowed to marry. So this gentleman was Ma'ares, the Almona, first stage of marriage. He gave her money in exchange for her agreeing to marry him. V'nisman Eliyos Kohen Gadol, and then he was appointed to a Kohen, to the position of Kohen Gadol. Yichnois, that means he can consummate his marriage with her. So that the main factor would be, what is the status of the people at the time of the Erusin? And as we saw, at the time of the Erusin, this was an okay, a mutter, an allowed type of marriage. Umaisa b'Yoshua ben Gamla, there was an incident involving this gentleman, Yoshua ben Gamla, Shekidesh es Marta bas Baitus. The word Kidesh is like the word erase. It's reference to the first stage of marriage. And he offered his hand in marriage to Marta Bas Baitus. Now, this woman was an almona. Uminehu Hamelech Lios Kohen Gadol. He was then appointed to the position of Kohen Gadol, Vikonsa, and he continued consummating his marriage with her. Shomeres Yavam shenofla lufnei kohen hedyot. Shomeres Yavam is by definition an almona. Her husband died, leaving no children, but he left a surviving brother, and we're talking about brothers that were kohanim. And she fell to yibum. She became a yavama to a kohen hedyot, a common kohen. V'nisman elios kohen gadol, and then he was appointed to the position of kohen gadol. Afal pi she'asa bo maimer, even though he gave her money, meaning before he was appointed to Kohen Gadol, he had given her money, the Yavama money, which is a rabbinic form of Kiddushin when dealing with a Yavama. So that even though he was Mekadesh her, so to speak, by giving the Yavama money, Harei ze lo yichnos, we do not allow him to consummate the marriage after he was appointed to the Kohen Gadol position. So we see there is a difference between a Kohen Hedyot who was Ma'ares, a woman, and a Kohen Hedyot who became a Yavam, where she became a Shomeres Yavam during the Kohen Hedyot period. After which, in both cases, he was appointed to Kohen Gadol. The case of the Erusin, where he initiated the marriage, so he is allowed to consummate that marriage. However, where it's this heaven-ordained marriage, there he is not to consummate the marriage. Tanu Rabbanan. We also should point out that the sources for these points will be featured in the Gemara. And on the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei Kohen Hedyot. 1. She'ires Amona. 2. Nofla Lefonov Yevoma. V'achakach Nisman Elias Kohen Gadol. Mahu Lahachnis Noshim Elu. So, as we saw and we explained in the Mishnah, can he go ahead and machnis these women? That means to bring them in to consummate his marriage with them. Tanu Rabbanan, minayin she'im ires esu amona. From where do we know that if the kohen was ma'ares a widow, v'nisman elios kohen gadol shiachnos, and then was subsequently appointed to the position of kohen gadol, that he is allowed to consummate his marriage with her, even though if he had initiated the marriage through erusin after he was already a kohen gadol, that would not be allowed. But here, he initiated the marriage, the Erusin, while he was still a common Kohen. From where do we know that he's allowed to take her in to consummate the marriage? The Pasuk says, Besula me'amov yikach isha. The word isha is a redundancy or superfluous word as far as the text of the Pasuk is concerned. But from this extra word, we learn this particular point. Ihachi, if the word Isha is inclusive of this case where the Erusin was done while he was still a Kohen Hedyot, and we allow the consummation of the marriage with this widow after he was appointed to Kohen Gadol, so why not say the same thing for the Shomeres Yavam? So the Gemara answers, Isha velo Yavama. The word Isha is exclusive of a Yavama, so that we have an allowance in the case of where the man initiated the marriage and not in the case where it was a heaven-ordained marriage, as is the case of Yavama. Maisa, B'Yoshua, and etc. And then we saw, Mineu, Mamelech, Lios, Kohen Gadol. Mineu in, Nismane lo. The difference in language between Mineu and Nismane is mashmai, the implication is that the king appointed him, but the other kohanim and the high court did not appoint him. Omar Rav Yosef, kotir kochazina hocha. A kotir literally is a kesher, a knot, but it's a type of band of wicked people I see over here. I see something questionable. Diomar Rav Asi. Rav Asi tells us, Tirkava de Dinri Ailo Le Marta Bas Vices. A Tirkava is a measure, a certain measure of dinrim, of coins. Marta Bas Vices paid Lianai Malka, paid Yanai the king. Ademuki Le Leshua Ben Gamlo Bakani Ravavi. And through her payment of a lot of money to the king, then he acceded to appointing him, Yeshua ben Gamlo, as the Kohen Ravri. Kohen Ravri is the Kohen Gadol. So you see that it was a position that had to be bought for him, which is, of course, not the right way to do things. And that's what Rav Yosef said, that it smells foul over here. Before continuing with the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei, a topic heading, Kohen Gadol V'Yibum. Can a Kohen Gadol enter a Yibum marriage? Well, we saw before that a Kohen Gadol should not marry an Almona. We even had in our previous Mishnah a Shemeres Yavam that fell to a Kohen Hedyot and was later appointed a Kohen Gadol, he shall not take her in. This is all a function of the Yavama being an Almona, and an Almona is prohibited from a Kohen Gadol. So our Mishnah says, Kohen Gadol Shemes Ochiv. A Kohen Gadol whose brother died, leaving no children, but leaving a widow, Choleitz Velo Miyabem. He is to release her through the shoe removal ceremony, but not marry her. Kaposik v'tani, the Mishnah speaks in an unqualified fashion, lo yishna min ha'erusin v'lo shna min hanisuin. The prohibition of his marrying the brother's wife makes no difference whether the brother had entered merely nis'erusin with her or consummated the marriage with his wife. Now, if he was merely an orus to her, they had simple erusin, the woman, the widow, is still a basula. She is not a woman that has had intimacy yet. That point is important to remember as we continue in the Gemara. Bishlama min ha'nisuin, I understand well that the Kohen Gadol is not to do Yibum with the sister-in-law that had reached Nisuin with the deceased brother, because the mitzvah at hand versus what it's going to cost him, the Kohen Gadol, so to speak, clearly the mitzvah of Yibum is overruled, is outweighed, because of the following. Asei v'loisa asehu. The Kohen Gadol has a mitzvah, asei, a positive command to marry a basula, a virgin, which she is not if she had consummated her marriage with her husband. V'loisa asehu, and also the Kohen Gadol is warned against marrying a widow, an almona. That's a negative command. So the Kohen Gadol, on the Kohen Gadol side of things, there is a mitzvah asay that he would be violating, and there is a mitzvah lo asay that he would be violating if he marries her. V'ein asay doiche lo asay v'asay, and the mitzvah, the positive command of Yibum, in other words, marrying the widow, is only a positive command, and an asay is not capable of overruling the aforementioned loisase and ase. Ela min ha'erusin, but if the widow, the avoma, had only reached the erusin stage of marriage with her husband, that means she is still a basula. Yavoi ase, let the positive command of the of marrying her, of Yibum, come, v'yidche es loisas, and overrule the negative command on the Kohen Gadol side of things, namely, the negative command of not marrying an almona. And as far as rules of mitzvah hierarchy, we give more power to the mitzvah sasei. A mitzvah sasei overrules a negative command. So that why, in the case where she is an almona from Erusin, do we not entitle the Kohen Gadol to do the mitzvah of Yibum? The Gemara answers, Gzeira biorishoina otu biyoshnia. True, the first act of intimacy would be a case of the asay of Yibum, the positive mitzvah of Yibum, pushing off or overruling the fact that she is an almona. But if we allow the Kohen Gadol to do that, he might very well continue living with her as husband and wife, which they are, but the biyashnia, that's no longer the mitzvah of Yibum. The mitzvah of Yibum was fulfilled by the first act of intimacy. The second, or any subsequent act of intimacy, you're left with the fact that he is a Kohen Gadol living with an almona, and that would be usur. And therefore, we don't want him, the Kohen Gadol, to even get started. The Mishnah. The next topic that we have on the side, Kohen Hedyot v'nisuav la'ailinis, a standard Kohen, and marriage to an Ailinis. An Ailinis is a woman that is incapable of bearing children. She doesn't mature or develop in a normal maturation form. And hence, she doesn't she simply remains incapable of bearing children. So the Mishnah says, Kohen Hedyot lo yiso eilenis. A Kohen Hedyot is not to marry an eilenis. Ela im kein yesh lo isha ubonim. Unless he already has a wife and children. Now, Rashi points out, because he is commanded to procreate of pre-ribya, the Gemara will be asking, what is it that only Kehanim have that mitzvah? Doesn't everybody have that mitzvah? Don't Yisraelim also have that mitzvah? So that is true. And hence we'll be asking in the Gemara, why does the Mishnah emphasize a Kohen not marrying an eilenis when that would apply to everybody? The Mishnah continues, Reb Yehuda Omer, Afal pi sheyesh lo isha ubanim lo yiso eilenis. Even if he does have a wife and children, a Kohen Hedyot is commanded not to marry the eilenis. Shehi zoyna ha'amura b'torah. She is the fulfillment or the illustration, the example of zona that the Torah forbids a Kohen to marry. A Kohen cannot marry several different kinds of women. A zoyna, a grusha, a divorcee, a halala, a woman whose father was a Kohen and married a divorcee. So there are different types of women that the Torah prohibits. One of them is a zona, and that word itself, its definition isn't so understood or so clear. Hence, the Mishnah clarifies that an eilenis, according to the Tana, Rebbe Yehuda, is what the Torah means when it says that a Kohen should not marry a zoina. V'chachomim omrim ein zoina elo giyores. A zona, by definition, according to the Chachamim, is a convert. Let's continue. I should stop a little early there. Ela giores umeshuchreres v'shinivala beilas znus. A zona is, and the Chachamim obviously disagree with Reb Yehuda. Reb Yehuda defined the zona as an eilenis, and they say no. A zona is a convert, a bondmaid that was freed, and a woman that had experienced prohibited intimacy. The Tosfos at the bottom, in citing Rashi, Tosfos at the bottom says, "Shenivala bilaznus pirsh bekunshus Yisraelis shenivala leposola." A Jewish woman who had intimacy with a person unfit for her. Now that would seem to include a woman that violated a negative command. The E.F. Shalomar Kain Tosfos disagrees with Rashi. The Mechayve Lavin the Tafsi Bo Kedushin Lo Havizona. If a woman had relations with a man, though prohibited to her through a negative command, however, in the event that they do attempt to marry one another, the marital bond will form. According to Tosfos, that does not produce a zona. Ella, mechayve krisus, kinepirush ba'achilitz. Rather, according to Tosfos, the only thing that would produce a zona is intimacy with a type of individual that there would be a kores punishment for that intimacy. That would include the list of many of the people found in the list of forbidden relatives. That's as far as what a zona is according to the Chachamim. We go back to the Gemara. Amarle Reish Galusa L'Rav Huna. My Taima. Why should a Kohen not marry an eilenis? Unless, of course, he has a wife and children. Mishum priya v'ribya, because of the need for fulfilling the mitzvah of procreation. So we ask, regarding this mitzvah of procreation, are only Kohanim Mifkidi means commanded to fulfill it, and non-Kohanim Yisrael is not commanded? Why does the Mishnah focus on a Kohen? Omar Lay. So Rav Huna answers the Reish Galus. So the Reish Galus is the exilarch. Rav Huna answers, Mishum de Kaboi Lemisni Seifa. The opening of the Mishnah used Kohen simply in anticipation of the continuation of the Mishnah, which was clearly Kohen related, namely Reb Yehuda Omer, Afal pi sheyesh loy isha v'yesh lo bon, we're at the top of Omid Beis, v'yesh lo bonim lo yiso eilenis she zoino amura b'torah. Since Reb Yehuda states his opinion that a Kohen under no circumstances may marry an eilenis because of her zona status in his eyes, and the zona prohibition is restricted to Kohanim, is limited to Kohanim. As the Gemara says, the azoina Kohanim hu de mifkidi v'Yisrael lo mifkidi, regarding zona, only Kohanim are prohibited and not Yisrael, not non-Kohanim. Mishumachi kotoni Kohen, that's why the Mishnah opened up with Kohen. Even though, as far as the opening opinion, it is true, the hesitation to marrying an eilenis is a function of puravu, and in fact is not limited to kohanim. The Gemara continues, Omar Rav Huna, my time of Rabbi Yehuda. What is the basis of Rabbi Yehuda? He says that an eilenis is called a zoina. Dichtiv. The pasuk says, "Ochlu velo yisbau, hiznu velo yifroitzu." Kol bia she'ein ba pritza. Any intimacy that has no pritza means procreation. Eino ela beilaznus. That is called an intimacy of znus, of frivolity, of immorality, of waywardness. The Tosfos points out that a ketana, a minor, a girl, is of course muteris to be married to a kohen, but intimacy with her, because of her youth, will not lead to procreation. Nevertheless, there's nothing wrong with that. So why there, even though it's an intimacy that will not lead to procreation, why is that okay? But marriage with the eilenis is not okay, according to Reb Yehuda. The answer is that a ketana, though right now she's not capable of procreation, she will become capable of it. So since she's a person that has the potential, so that does not come under the prohibition of this pasuk. The Gemara continues. You can see we have a slash mark, so that which follows is a new point. On the side of the Gemara, triangles will appear shortly. These are Hesberim Ledino Shel Rabbi Eliezer. We're going to learn Rabbi Eliezer's din de Kayin Lo Yisa Es Haktana. On the heels of what we were just saying, we cited in Tosfos, we're now going to see Shitas Rabbi Eliezer, who does not want a Kohen to marry a Ketana. You can see we have an unusual marking, the firebox. So there's a starred note that reads, Siba Simunzeh, the reason for this marking, the firebox marking, Beglash Shekola Omud Ad HaMishnah Osuk B'dino Shereb Lezer B'braiso Zeh. The entire Omud of Gemara is going to be dedicated to his halacha. The Omud until the Mishnah that you can see at the end after the last narrow line of Gemara text. Tanya Rebbe Eliezer Omer Kohen Lo Yiso Esaktana. A Kohen is not to marry a minor. Omer Le Rav Chista Le Rabbo. Rav Chista turns to Rabbo and says, Poke Ayin Bo, go out and look into this. Why is that so, that a Kohen should not marry a Katana? De la'urta boi lo Rav Huna minach. This in the evening, Rav Huna is going to ask you about this. Nofak ayin bob. He went out, Rabba went out and looked into it. And what conclusion did he reach? And again, we point out that the triangles that you see starting here, and you're going to see quite a few of them as we go down the Omid, these are explanations. What is the reason for Abelezer's prohibition or restriction? So, number one, Rabbi Elezer Savar law. Rabbi Elezer is an opinion that is a combination of Savar Lok Rabbi Meir, the Savar Lok Rabbi Yehuda. He combines two separate halachic rulings, one of Rabbi Meir and one of Rabbi Yehuda, and comes up with this conclusion. Savar Lok Rabbi Meir, Dechayesh Lemiuta. Rabbi Elezer accepts the principle of Rabbi Meir that when there is something of, we'll say, of doubt or of prohibition, we take into consideration in formulating our ruling even the minority. And we, when looking at this girl, we see she's only a child now. Will she mature properly or healthfully or not? Most children do mature and reach adulthood with the capacity of procreation. However, there is a minority of girls that do not. So that there is on the minority side of things, there is a chance that this girl will end up being an islandess. V'savar lok Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Eliezer in this brisa also holds like Rabbi Yehuda, domar islandess equals zoina havia. She would be a zona. So by the Kohen marrying a Ketana, he's getting himself involved with a potential prohibition. One might even say that retroactively, if it turns out that she reaches adulthood and doesn't mature, so that she was really an islandess all along, and he was in violation of marrying what Rabbi Yehuda would call a zona. So as you can see, Rabbi Eliezer combines these two approaches, namely Chayesh Lemiuta and the classification of a islandess as a zayna, to result in his restriction of marrying a kohen should not marry a katana, a minor. The Gemara asks, now take note of the fact we have a very long question. Is this assumption that Rabba is making correct? Ukerebi meir mi sovar law. Notice we have that phrase squiggle underline, and an aleph appears. If you skim down a couple lines, you'll notice there's a base and a squiggle underline. Ukerebi Yehuda mi sovar law. Does Rabbi Elezer hold like Rabbi Yehuda? And all of this forms one basic question that, to build up an explanation for Rabbi Elezer based on his holding like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, is unlikely. The Gemara asks, Ukerebi Meir mi sovar law. Does Rabbi Eliezer hold like Rabbi Meir? V'ha tanya, katan uktana loy choltsin v'lo miabnim, divrei Rabbi Meir. A minor boy, a male, and a minor female, shall not participate in chalitza or in yibum. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Omru lo l'Rabbi Meir. The rabbis addressed Rabbi Meir and said, Yofa marta shein choltsin. I understand why a ketana shall not engage in chalitza. She should not remove the shoe of her deceased husband's brother. Why? Ish ksiv b'parsha. The word ish appears. Ish indicates a male adult, and that's what you find in the parsha of Sota of Yibum. Sorry, that's correct. Of Yibum. Umakshinon isha leish, and we compare isha to ish. That means the female is compared to the male. That for chalitza, adulthood is required. Elamai taimo ein miabnin. Why? No yibum. Amale, so Rabbi Meir answers, Katan Shemo Yimsa Soris. The Katan might not mature properly and turn out to be a Soris. A Soris is a male, I think I've seen it translated as a eunuch. It's a male that is incapable of procreation, doesn't mature properly. And Katana Shemo Timsa Ailinis. And if you're talking about a girl who's a Katana minor, she might turn out to be an Ailinis. And if you have a Katan that turns out to be a Soros, or the Katana turns out to be an Ailinis, Vinsu Pagan Berva, then you have a brother-in-law slash sister-in-law marrying the surviving individual in a non-halachically sanctioned fashion, and that's called Eishes Ach Sheloi B'Mokoi Mitzvah. That's where you're marrying the wife of your deceased brother in a non-mitzvah format. The mitzvah of Yibum is to have the widow bear a child who would be called or be the continuation, the spiritual continuation of the deceased brother, of her deceased husband. And if one side is incapable of procreation, so then the whole reason for the mitzvah falls away. And then you're left with a simple brother-in-law, sister-in-law cohabitation, which is prohibited. Vitanya, Ketano Misyabemes, Vieno Choletzes, Divrei Rebbe Eliezer. Note, Rebbe Eliezer holds that a Ketano is acceptable in the Yibum mitzvah. In the mitzvah of Yibum, compare Rebbe Eliezer to Rebbe Meir. Use your arrows. You see the arrow here, Ketano Misyabemes, and above Ketano, we said below Miyabnim, that was Rebbe Meir's opinion. So you see that they clearly do not agree with one another. Ucha Rebbe Yehuda, mi sovar lo. Does Rebbe Eliezer hold like Rebbe Yehuda? Vaha Tanya. Zoina, that's the word that you find in the Torah. Zona kishmo, divrei Rebbe Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that Zona, as far as what does that mean in the context of the Kohen prohibition, it's what the simple meaning of the word implies, which is a married woman that goes astray. A married woman, she has a husband and she has intimacy with some other man. That's Rabbi Eliezer's definition of Zoina. The Rashi points out, Kishma, we're looking at Rashi in the upper part of the narrow lines, Lashon Toya, it's a word indicating a mistake. Shetoya mitachas bala, or goes astray, maybe more accurate, not a mistake in the conventional sense of someone unwittingly did something, but rather it's to Toya, like the expression in Hebrew, Toya baderech, means someone who is going astray on his way. He doesn't know where he's going. So this is Shetoya mitachas baila chirim. Rebbe Lezer ain zona elo eishesish. According to Rebbe Lezer, zona is limited to a married woman going astray. Well, right away you see that's not like Rebbe Yehuda's definition. So anyway, that's the first opinion in this source that gives you a number of opinions as to what a zona is. Rebbe Kiva omer zona zu mufkeres. Rebbe Akiva says that a zona is a woman who is mufkeres, means she declares herself, or she lives a life of total looseness, of frivolity. Rashi says, mufkeres vafilu penuya, even a single woman, me'achar shifkira atzmo lakol, since she has opened herself up to everybody, kruya zoina. Avol mishum bi'ilo achas lo havya zoina hapnuya. This Rashi is contrasting Rabbi Akiva with another opinion, the opinion of Rebbe Lazar, not Rabbi Eliezer, but Rebbe Lazar, who says that even a one-time fling can result in the woman becoming a zona. Ponui haba pnuya. That's a sheet we'll see later. So anyway, we continue. Rabbi Akiva then was a second opinion as what zona is. Rabbi Masya ben Chorosh Omer. Now, a third opinion as to what a zona is, afilu holach bailo lahashkoisa, a husband and wife. A husband is on his way, taking his wife to the Beis HaMikdash for her to drink the special waters that test out whether she, his wife, had gone astray. So, let's just point out that a man who had warned his wife not to be with some other fellow, and witnesses testify that she was in private. They don't testify whether she was engaged in the actual act of intimacy, but they testify that she was in private with another man. The husband then is obligated to take her to the Beis HaMikdash to be tested out by, to discover whether or not she went all the way and had intimacy with that other guy. In the meantime, the husband is forbidden to have intimacy with his own wife. So Rav Masya tells us that even a husband who's taking his wife to drink the sotah waters, the testing waters in the Beis HaMikdash, and he violates the law, and he violates the Torah law, and has intimacy with his wife on their way to the Beis HaMikdash. Asa'o zona. He makes her, through that forbidden act of intimacy, into a zona. That is called, that's an act of intimacy with someone that is posel to her. By the way, that approach is found in Rashi, and that's where Rashi says, Hoyol v'nival l'posula. This is the expression that Rashi used at the bottom of Samach Aleph Amad Aleph, which Tosfos, by the way, had taken issue with. But you can see that's the opinion of Rav Masya ben Chorosh, a forbidden act of intimacy, even though there is no kores with such a violation. Nevertheless, Rav Masya says that will make her into a zona. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, zona zu ailinis. Now, you should note, by way of markings, the only opinion that's important at this point to emphasize is Rabbi Yehuda, so as we're able to contrast him with Rabbi Eliezer, who we also dashed underline the number one opinions. Now, number one and number four are clearly different. So that, as we said before, how could Rabbo possibly explain that Rabbi Eliezer above in the firebox source holds like Rabbi Yehuda when he does not hold like Rabbi Yehuda? We continue. The Chachamim Omrim Ein Zona Ela, and the Chachamim define Zona, as we saw earlier, Giores Umeshuchreres, a convert or a freed bondmaid, Veshinivala Bilas Znus, or a woman, a Israelis that had forbidden relations. Rabbi Elazar Omer, not to be confused with Rabbi Eliezer, who opened up the source. So, this would be the sixth opinion in this particular source. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Ponui Habo al Hapnuyo Shelo L'Shem Ishus Asa Zona. A single fellow that has a one-time fling with a single girl, even that, and as Tosfos adds, it goes without saying that a married man that has a fling with a single girl, even one time, would make her into a zona, and hence prohibited to kohanim. You can just imagine on a practical halachic basis, when one, let's say, lives in a rather loose society where a very large portion, the overwhelming majority of girls, as a result of their membership in the loose society, have engaged in intimacy quite early on in their life. If we were to rule like Rebbe Elazar, Kaihanim would have very few mates to pick from, because according to Rebbe Elazar, all those girls that we just described in the loose, free type society are classified as zoinus. We're not suggesting for even a second that we actually rule like Rebbe Elazar, but it just shows how far things could go if we were to rule like him. main point, though, for our sugya is that we don't have an explanation for Rabbi Lezer's ruling above that a kohen should not marry a katana. This brings us to the next approach. Elo Omar Rav Ado Bar Ahavo. Hocha b'kohen godol askinon. The din of Rabbi Lezer, namely the kohen should not marry a katana, is talking about a kohen godol, a high priest. Li'emas koni lo. At what point does he acquire her? Does he acquire her, meaning does their marital bond consummate or concretize? L'chi godla, when she becomes an adult, the reason being that a kohen godol who attempts to marry a minor girl doesn't have the capacity of creating a kinyan, a bond, a marital bond. And at what point would her marriage to the kohen take hold? It would take hold only when she reaches adulthood. But at that point, since he married her while she was still a minor, be'ula hi, she's no longer a virgin. And it's forbidden for a kohen gadol to marry a non-besula, a non-virgin. Rava asks, Omar Rava, Mechali Lev. This is just an expression that indicates wonderment. We don't have to translate it. He's like, he's exasperated with this explanation. E, the kitsha avua, if her father married her, Meahi Shaitahu de Konila, from that moment where the father married off his daughter, the Kohen Gadol acquires, or the bonding is formed at that point. And that's a legitimate, complete marriage. And of course, as she's still a Basula. Ve'i de Kitsha Nafsha, and if it's a case of the girl marrying herself off as a minor without her father's involvement, because her father died, let us say, well, ha, Rebbe Eliezer hi v'lo Rabbanan, is that going to be then a prohibition according to Rebbe Eliezer alone and not the Rabbanan? The Rabbanan would agree with that. Why then does it say above that that's only Rebbe Eliezer's opinion? Elo Omar Rava, li'oilom b'kohen hedyot. The din of Rebbe Lozer is, in fact, referring to a standard kohen, a common kohen, not like Rav Ada said it's a din limited to a kohen gadol, but rather it applies to a kohen hedyot. V'chayshinon shema tispate olav. We're afraid that this girl that the kohen hedyot marries, she's a child. Children are somewhat lightheaded, and she could be seduced by some other man, and that would be very unfortunate. He would be then prohibited to continue living with his wife. Well, the Gemara asks, Ihachi Yisrael Nami. If that's the case, then why only by a kohen is this a concern? Is that not a concern with any rank and file Jew? And we should say that any rank and file Jew should not marry a katana, a minor. The Gemara answers, in that case, petuye katana, the seduction of a minor, halachically speaking, oinus, who is considered a rape, because the little girl doesn't have her mind about her. If she is seduced by some man, that's tantamount to a rape. The oinus be Yisrael mishur shori, and the wife of a non-kohen of Yisrael, in the unfortunate situation of her being raped, she still is allowed to go back to her husband. Not so in the case of a kohen. So that Rava is worried about the case of a kohen katana wife being seduced, and even if you classify that as rape, the wife of a kohen, even if she's raped, unwilling in that particular act, Nevertheless, she's forbidden to her husband. Another explanation. Rav Papa Omar, but Kayin Gadol, the Din of Rebbe Lezer is talking about a Kayin Gadol. The High Tana Hu. And it is in accordance with the following Tanaic opinion. The Sanya. And here we have a source opening up with a word from the Torah, a posuk that deals with a Kayin Gadol. Besula me'amov yikach isha. That's what the posuk says. A besula, a virgin he shall take. Yochol kitana. Well, if you're saying that it must be a besula, that's what a Kohen Gadol must take. Does that include even a minor under 12 years old? Talmud lomar isha. The pasuk we read, besula me'amov yikach isha. The word isha appears in the pasuk, and the word isha is a word reflecting adulthood, excluding a minor. That is just like we saw above in the name of Rebbe Eliezer. Well, Isha Yachol Bogeris, if the Torah is saying he shall take a Basula, does that include even a Bogeris? Bogeris is a woman above age 12 and a half. Talmud Lomar Basula. So the word Basula comes to exclude a Bogeris. Ha Ketzad, so what are you left with? How is this to be understood? Yotza Miklal Katnus Ulechlal Bagrus Lo Basa. We're talking about a half year period of time where the girl that would be kosher, acceptable for a Kayin Gadol, has left the category of katnus of minor, namely she is 12 years of age, Ulechlal Bagrus Lo Basa, and she has not reached the age of Bagrus, which is 12 and a half. So, according to this, at face value, it would appear to be a Din Torah, according to this Tana, which, as far as Rav Pop is concerned, Rabbi Elazar buys into this. It would be a Torah law that he cannot marry a minor. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Omar, Hai Tana Hu, Desanya, Besula. Ein Besula Ela Nara. The word Besula, according to this Tana, means Nara, to the exclusion of a Ktana, to the exclusion of a minor. V'chein hu Omer, V'nara Toivas Mare Me'oid Besula. So in this pasuk, which deals with the matriarch Rivka, she's described as a Nara and Besula. So giving us grounds for maintaining that when a girl is a Nara of age, then she would be described as a Basula. Or a Basula is a girl that is Nara age, between 12 and 12 and a half. We're at this point, the Gemara quotes from the source above, the last opinion in the source dealing with what is a zona. Rabbi Lozer Omer Poni Habo Ala Pnuya Shilolu Shem Ishus Asa Zona, single fellow, and as we saw before in Tosis, it means even a single fellow, certainly a married man that has a fling, that has intimacy with a single girl, with intimacy without marital intent. That's Shalol Shem Ishus. That makes her into a zona. So zona. Omar Rav Amram, Ein Halacha Karebi Elazar. So Rav Amram tells us that we do not follow Rav Elazar's opinion in establishing applied Halacha. The Mishnah. Lo Yivatel Adam Mipirio Viribya. The Mishnah here introduces the topic of procreation. So we're told that a person shall not cease or desist from engaging in procreation. Elo im ken yesh lo banim, unless he has children. Beishamai says, how many children? Shnei zecharim, two, and gender wise, two males. Ubeisil omrim, zochar unikeva. Shnemar zochar unikeva bar om. So that procreation requires the producing of a male and a female. So according to Beis Hillel, a person can have many sons and no daughters, he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Piria Viribia. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei, a topic heading, where a diamond appears. These are Shnei Lishonos, two versions, Be'inyan Adam Shekim Peruvu, man who has fulfilled the mitzvah of procreation. Ma Legabi Hatzurch Becholzos Shiel Lo Isha. What is the halacha's expectation of his having a wife anyway? So now, our Mishnah had said, one shall not desist from Pirvibya unless he has sons. And we infer, Ha Yesh Lo Bonim, if he has children, Nipiria Viribya Batil, he is entitled to desist from procreation. However, Meisha Lo Batil, but he shall not remain unmarried. So that you can have a man, and age is not a factor anymore. It's just a man, he happened to have children, might be quite elderly. He had children, and we infer from the Mishnah that once you have children, you are allowed to desist from procreation, but you cannot remain without a wife. Messiah lay, the Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. This approach supports Rav Nachman, who said in the name of Shmuel, Di Omar, Afalpi, Shiesh Lo, Lodom Kama Bonim, even if a person has numerous children, Osu Lamod Below Isha, you cannot remain unmarried. Shnemar, Loi Toiv, Hayoisa Odom Levado, it is not good for a man to be alone. And when we say alone, you see that alone means without a wife. Because here we're describing someone who has a lot of kids. They might even be all living with him, but that doesn't mean that he is not levado. The Gemara continues. The Ika di Amri, a second version. Ha Yesh Lo Bonim. The Mishnah could be understood that, well, if he does have children, in other words, we infer from the Mishnah that if he does have children, Botil Mipiria Viribya Ubotil Nami Miisha, he can then desist from procreation and need not be married either. Should we say that if you read the Mishnah like this and infer from the Mishnah like this, then we have a source that would refute Rav Nachman, whose opinion says that a man always has to be with a wife. Loi. So Rav Nachman will respond, or his opinion, whoever represents his opinion, will say no. Ein loi bonim, noisei isha bas bonim. The Mishnah, that which we infer from the Mishnah, is as follows. That if he, or actually, the Mishnah itself says that if he doesn't have children, so then he has to marry a woman capable. Bas bonim means capable of procreation. Yesh lo bonim. However, if he has children, then noisei isha delav bas bonim. He still must marry a woman. However, in that case, even if she's incapable of procreation, she still qualifies as being his wife. Nafka mina limkor sefer Torah bishvil bonim. The practical application of this is, can a person sell a sefer Torah, which, by the way, the Gemara in Megillah, the Mishnah Megillah, tells us that in general one is not allowed to sell a sefer Torah. There are few exceptions. The Rashi says limkor sefer Torah kidei lisa bas bonim v'im yesh lo bonim lo yimkor elo yisa akora o zekena. So that if a person has children, according to this approach, if he has children, then he is not entitled to sell a sefer Torah in order to get money, in order to marry a woman who is specifically capable of procreation. Rather, he's expected to marry a woman who is not necessarily capable of procreation, and he'll be able to do so without selling the sefer Torah. He won't need the funds for marrying a barren type woman and therefore he should, being that he has children already, he should not sell the Sefer Torah. Before we continue, the topic heading on the side reads Mekoros Lashitas Lashitos Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. The Gemara will bring us sources for the opinions of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel Binyan Beizi Yelodim V'Kam Yelodim Mekayim Mitzvos Pruvu. How many kids and what and gender wise who must they be in order to fulfill this mitzvah? According to Beis Shammai, two Zecharim. According to Beis Hillel, two Zecharim means two males. According to Beis Hillel, male and female. So we continue, second line from the bottom, Beis Shammai Omrim, Shnei Zechorim, Maitai Mayu Beis Shammai. What is the reason for Beis Shammai that insists on having two males in order to fulfill the mitzvah Puravu? Answer, Yalfinon mi Moshe. Beis Shammai learns, or uses Moshe Rabbeinu as a precedent. Once he had two sons, we see that he separated from his wife. In other words, he no longer engaged in procreation because he fulfilled it by having his two sons. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, B'nei Moshe, Gershom, ve'Eliezer. These are the sons of Moshe by name, Gershom and Eliezer. And at that point, he separated from his wife. Ubeis Hillel, Yalfinon, mi Brioso shel Olam. And Beis Hillel learns from the fact that when God created the world, he created a man, Adam, and a female, Chava. Ubeis Shammai, Lufi, mi Brioso shel Olam. Why doesn't Beis Shammai learn from the creation of the world where a male and female were created? The Gemara answers, Ein Donin Efsher, mi She'i Efsher. We do not draw conclusions from for situations that continued world existence is possible from a situation where continued world existence would be impossible. If we glance at the Rashi at the top of Samach Beis Amud Aleph, Mishi Efsher, the Eloi Roi Chava, if Chava would not have been created, Lo Hava Nekevo Achriti, there would have been no other females, and as a result of that, there would be no procreation. Avol hacha, but nowadays, mi sheyesh lo shnei zecharim, a man who has two sons, the kevos harbe bolam, there are many females. One doesn't have to worry about the lack of world continuity. Therefore, using the situation of Efsher, namely Brios Olam, that cannot serve as a precedent for Efsher, the continuation of mankind, where procreation will still be possible even if you have two sons. Beis Hillel nami lilfu mi Moshe. Why doesn't Beis Hillel learn from Moshe Rabbeinu? Namely, two sons. Amri loch. Beis Hillel will tell you, Moshe midaite hu da'avad. Moshe Rabbeinu's behavior was something that he did on his own. It's not what he did might be acceptable, but it's not something that binds the rest of us. The Sanya and the Tanaic source tells us that Shlosha Dvarim also Moshe Midaito. There are three things that Moshe Rabbeinu did on his own. The Schema Daito Ladas HaMokom, and his conclusion matched that of the Almighty. Piresh Mino Isha, he separated from his wife, Veshiber Haluchos, and he smashed the tablets containing the Ten Commandments, Vehoisif Yoim Echad, and he added one full day in waiting for the receipt of the Torah at Mount Sinai. The examples will be elaborated upon as the Gemara continues. But for our purposes, what we need to emphasize, and that's why we have the dashed underlining under Piresh Mino Isha. So now you can see we have a volcano shape, and on the side of the under the Nosei Mivne heading, these represent his Beirim. These are explanations, L'shloisha Dvarim Shemoisha Osa Midaito, the three acts that Moshe did on his own without having been prior commanded. Hakadosh Baruch Hu iskim al yado, and the Almighty agreed with him. You'll see also a double underlining under the expression my darash. What was the basis of his conclusion? What did he darshan? How did he explain psukim in order to reach his own conclusion? And the dashed underlining is used to highlight the repetition of the expression v'skima daito l'das hamokom, where Moshe Rabbeinu's personal conclusion matched the thinking of the Almighty. Now, when we say matched the thinking of the Almighty, certainly in the case of Pirush Min Isha, we're not saying that that means that this is what the Almighty feels should be a precedent for the rest of humanity. All it means is that with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Almighty agrees that this is a proper behavior. So Pirush Min Isha, my Dorash, in order to conclude separating from his wife, what did he darshan as far as the psukim are concerned? Omar. And he came up with the following Kal v'chomer logic. Uma Yisrael shelo dibro imoim shchina elo shah. Mind you, the Jewish people who had heard the speech of the Almighty only momentarily, that was at the time of the receipt of the Torah. So there was a moment that the Almighty spoke to the entire nation. The first two commandments of the Ten Commandments were heard by Klal Yisrael by directly, without Moshe Rabbeinu communicating to them what Hashem was saying. So they had heard the Almighty speech for a moment. V'kova lohem zman. And the time for that event was also known ahead of time, was established at the outset. Omra Torah, and the Torah nevertheless says, Al tikshu elisha. They, the Jewish people, were to be separated from their wives for a few days in anticipation receiving the divine communication from the Almighty. The idea of a man being with his wife involves a certain amount of, well, either you want to say there's tuma, there's the tuma, there's keri, there's, which is also associated with kalus rosh, with a certain level of frivolity. Of course, in the context of man and wife, that's all perfectly all right. However, when it comes to that mindset or that level of seriousness and communication from the Almighty, the two do not go hand in hand. Therefore, in anticipation of having the divine, the Almighty speak to the Jewish people, was necessary for them to separate from their wives. Moshe Rabbeinu continues, and that's based on the pasuk that you see in the Torah, Al tikshu el isha, they shall not draw unto their wives. Those for a couple of days, for 3 days before the giving of the Torah, they were to be separated from, the entire Klal Yisrael were separated from their wives. Ani, says Moshe Rabbeinu, I, shemiyuchad ledibor b'chol shah v'shah, I have communication from the Almighty not just once, but at any time. For lo kova li zman, and there is no predetermined time for that communication, so I can't even get myself ready. Alachas kama v'kama, therefore all the more so I have to be ready at all times. And that involves being separated from his wife. V'skimo daito l'das hamokom, and the Almighty, when viewing Moshe Rabbeinu, was in approval of Moshe Rabbeinu's decision and conclusion. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Lech emor lohem, shuvu lochem lo lechem. The Almighty tells Moshe Rabbeinu after the giving of the Torah, he says, after the, we call Maimon Har Sinai, go back, he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, go tell the people, go back to your tents. And tent really means go back to your wives. The ata, but you, Moshe Rabbeinu, poi amoyid imode, you remain here with me. So in contrast to all the rest of Klal Yisrael, they go back to their lohalechem, to their wives, you do not. You can see we have a long bracketed section, and the note on the side by the star says, Sogram elu einom l'shem dilug, ela matarosim laharos she'ikar ha'tshuva kvar istayim. The brackets here are not for skipping purposes, but rather to show that the main answer, the main issue has been answered. In other words, as far as Pirish Minisha, what's the mocker for that? So we've seen that till this point. Uma Shemuva Bayamshech U Hashlama says Beirim Lishara Dvarim Shemoisha Osamidaito. The continuation of the Gemara within the brackets is simply to complete the list, the explanation of the list of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu had done on his own. So, with that in mind, we continue Shiber as Haluchos, my Dorash. We saw in the list the second example of things that Moshe Rabbeinu did on his own was he smashed the tablets containing the Ten Commandments, and that, of course, he did at the when he noticed, when he saw the nation of Israel participating or worshipping the golden calf, the Egel Azov. So my Dorash, what did Moshe Rabbeinu darshan in order to conclude that it's okay for me to smash the luchos? Omar. So he reasoned as follows. Uma Pesach, shehu echod mishesh meyes v'shloshesrei mitzvos. The Korban Pesach is a mitzvah. It's a single mitzvah. It's one of 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. It's only one mitzvah, though. Omra Torah. The Torah says regarding Korban Pesach, Kol ben nechor lo yochal bo. Literally, any stranger, anyone who has become estranged, anyone who is engaged in idol worship, shall not participate, shall not eat of it. So as far as one mitzvah is concerned, the ben nechor, the estranged individual, is not to participate in it. HaTorah Kula v'Yisrael Mumrim, the Ten Commandments, which essentially represents all of the Torah, and the Jews have become Mumrim, they have become, we'll say, rebellious heretics, Alachas Kama V'Kama, all the more so that they have no connection to receiving the Torah. V'skima daita l'datz ha'mokom, and his opinion was accepted by the Almighty. D'chtiv, the pasuk says regarding the tablets, it says asher shibarta, the Ten Commandments contained on the tablets, the shnei luchos habris, that asher shibarta, that you broke. V'yomer Reish Lakish amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, the Reish Lakish says that the Almighty said to Moshe Rabbeinu in this pasuk, asher means yasher kochacha, strength be unto you, or let your strength be strengthened, she shi barta, because you broke them. In other words, that's good reason. You deserve a, what do we call in common terms, a yishar koyach, for having broken the luchos. So you see, the Kodesh Baruch Hu approved of Moshe Rabbeinu's decision. Hoisif yoimechod midaito. On the occasion of receiving the Torah, there was a waiting period that we alluded to earlier, and Moshe Rabbeinu added one day to that period of time. My Dorash, what did he darshan as far as the Psukim are concerned? Dichtiv, the Pasuk, and means the Almighty commanded, V'kidashtem hayoim u'mochar, you shall sanctify yourselves today and tomorrow. Hayom kimochar, whatever is defined as today must be like tomorrow. Ma mochor leilo imo, just like tomorrow, the next day, the second day is a full day, meaning night plus following day, 24 hours. Af hayoim leilo imo, so too today, the first day must also be like that, a full night and this following full day. Velaylo doha idno nofak le, and here just now we're going to insert a word of background. The Almighty said to Moshe Rabbeinu on a Wednesday morning, on a Wednesday morning, v'kidashta mayom u'mochar. But now the velaylo do idno, today's night, in other words, the night belonging to today, to this Wednesday. Every day begins with the nighttime, the night. Vayerev vayboker, the Torah says that yom echad, that it's a day is defined by the preceding night and the following day. So if the Almighty spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu on Wednesday morning, where was the nighttime leading into Wednesday? That's gone. There was no separation then. The command for Kidashtem Hayom, Kidashtem is sanctification and separation from wives, that the Hayom then, according to Moshe Rabbeinu's analysis, could not possibly include the literal today, Wednesday, because, I'll read that again, the Laila Do Idna, today's evening, the evening that is part of Wednesday, Nofakle has already gone by, and we haven't separated from the wives yet. Shma Mino, therefore, one is to conclude, Tre Yomi, the 2 days that the Almighty speaks about, sanctify yourself today and tomorrow, those 2 days is Labar Meho Idna, is besides today, besides now. Now, Hoidna means now. Now meaning Wednesday. So that, what is the Almighty's intent according to Moshe Rabbeinu's analysis? 2 full days of separation, of sanctification, that would be Thursday and Friday. V'eskimo daita l'das ha'mokom, and Moshe Rabbeinu's analysis actually was aligned with the Almighty's thinking. And how do we know that? Delo shar yashchino ad shabbato, the divine presence set upon Mount Sinai for the giving of the Torah, first on Shabbos. Shabbos, by the way, begins with Friday night. But what we see from here is that God had spoken to Moshe Rabbeinu, had commanded him and the Jewish people, the Kidashtem Hayoyim Mochar, that communication was on a Wednesday morning. And if you were to just take things literally, that would have been Wednesday and Thursday, and the Torah would have been given on Friday. And that did not happen. The Torah was given on Shabbos, indicating that the 2 days the Almighty had in mind was in fact Thursday and Friday. The night leading into Thursday and Thursday daytime, the night leading into Friday and Friday daytime. Those are 2 full days. The Torah was eventually given on Shabbos. The continuation of the Gemara, you can see we have a crown marking. These are 2 Tanaic sources that introduce the opinion of Rabbi Nosson on what constitutes Pru Uruvu. So these are, in effect, and on the side of the Gemara, the Nosei Mivnehen, you can see Shnei Brises Shel Rabbi Nosson, Deos Neisafas Al Machlokes Beishamveis Hillel Beinyan Pru Uruvu. Rabbi Nosson is a later Tana. He reflects his version of the Machloikis Beisham Beis Hillel. So we see Tanya, number 1, Rabbi Nosson Oimer, Beishamai Omer Shnei Zechorim, U Shtei Nekevis. According to Beishamai, procreation is achieved only with the birthing of 4 children, 2 males and 2 females. U Beis Hillel Omer, Zechor U Nekeva. This version of Beis Hillel is not something new. We've seen before, 2 children, male and female. Omar of Huna, my time of the Rabbi Nosson, the leader of the Beis Shammai. What is the basis of Rabbi Nosson's opinion of Beis Shammai? Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Vatosef Loledes Es Achiv Es Hevel. In the story of creation, we see that Adam and Chava had children. They had Cain and Hevel. And it says, Es Achiv Es Hevel. So that you see a reference to 2 brothers. There's Hevel and his brother, and then there's the word Es. Hevel ve'achosai, Cain ve'achosai. So that Adam and Chava had to give birth. They birthed these, indicating that's what one must do. So that we're uksiv, kishos li elokim zera acher tachas Hevel. Ki harogoi kayin. Pasuk also says that as far as Adam and Chava's obligations were concerned, with upon the premature death of Hevel as a result of his being murdered by Cain, so Adam and Chava, the parents, were lacking one child in order to fulfill Pruvu. And the pasuk indicates that with the birth of Shes, their obligation was fulfilled. So this we take a look at Rashi. Kishosli zera achir atachas hevel. There was placed me another a child in place of hevel. Alma tashlumin boy. So we see that there is the need for making up for replacing. And it's not enough to be without four children, two males, two females. V'rabbonon, the Rabbonon who disagree with Rabbi Nosson, what do they say about this pasuk? Kishosli alekim zeracher, eldoye hu deka moidis. They were simply acknowledging and praising and thanking the Almighty that He provided them with a replacement for their lost child, but not to derive from here an obligation. Tanyo idach, another approach. Rabbi Nosson, another Tanaic source involving Rabbi Nosson. Rabbi Nosson Omer Beis Shammai Omrim Zohar Unikeva Beis Hillel Omrim Oy Zohar Oy Nikeva. So this, as far as Beis Hillel is concerned, would be the most lenient approach. One child would be enough, either male or female. Omar Rava My Taima De Rabbi Nosson Aliba De Beis Hillel. What is the basis of Rabbi Nosson's version of Beis Hillel, which is the new approach? As far as if you're looking for sources for Beis Shammai Zohar Unikeva, that we already saw before. But what about this opinion, either male or female? Shinemar, the pasuk says Loisoihu V'ra'a L'sheves Yitzara. The Almighty did not create the world to be told, to be void. Rather, He created it to be inhabited. V'ha Avad L'sheves. And by having one child, so you have contributed to the concept or the phenomenon of habitation. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.